Hey, what is going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, recording on Friday, December 20th. I am Vlad Sedler, and I am joined again by Mike Mager. Mike and I are doing a part two of our podcast that we series that we did. We started on Wednesday, so we were recording literally 2 days later. This is the shortest time frame in between podcasts in FTN Fantasy Baseball history. Because we've got a lot to cover, specifically on starting pitchers. Mike, how are you? Are you ready for the holidays?
I am doing great in terms of ready for the holidays. That's a work in progress, but happy to be back and hitting pitching. I think in some ways, maybe it's more important than hitting for our fantasy purposes. So let's do it.
Let's do it. Yes. And of course, since that time, since we recorded 2 days ago, there have been, again, a few more signings, a few more interesting rumors. So we'll touch on that briefly. And then today we will discuss what is essentially the first six rounds of starting pitchers, first six rounds within 15 teamers. So you're looking at players with an ADP from one to around 90, 95, somewhere around 100. So these are about your top 30 or so starting pitchers. We won't dive too deep into them because we will have this coverage a little bit more closer to spring training, but that's what we'll kind of talk about. First things first, a reminder, ftnfantasy.com. This is the site where our 2025 draft guide has been officially released. We've got 15 plus strategy articles from various staff, obviously from myself, from Mike, rankings, projections, lots of really cool tools that are coming out. And if you're still not in, the holiday sale runs through January 1st. It's a 15% off the regular or the high stakes package. One of those articles is the first part of a series from Mike, who was last year's NFBC auction overall champion. And Mike is essentially written the first part of his primer series. And I wanted to feature it before we kind of dug into things. If Mike, you could tell everybody what the article is about if they haven't read it yet.
Sure. Happy to. I love auctions. And one of my thoughts is I would love to see more auction content out there and wanted to contribute to making that happen. I think it's the best form or most fun form of drafting. And so I started an auction primer, and it's going to be probably two sections, two parts, but it remains to be seen. All I know is I have part one done. And my thinking is to kind of divide it up into a couple of parts, with part one focused on the pre-draft preparations. And so I cover, you know, this series is really for folks who maybe have only done a few auctions, or maybe just stepping into the first time doing an auction. And so after a section kind of covering, you know, basic auction rules, the article gets into player evaluation and the use of average auction value data, AAV data. Then it turns to at least how I think of and use projections as well as valuations in preparation of an auction. Then I discuss kind of winnowing the player pool. I think that's something that a lot of experienced auction players like to do. There's a lot of players who are going to be nominated during an auction, and you can only roster 23 of them. Sometimes it helps just to, you know, exclude folks from your sheets and just not bid on them at all. And then kind of developing an auction strategy. We talk about, you know, stars and scrubs, spread the wealth, and kind of where you might fall in between there, and kind of developing a basic hitting and pitching strategy. I ask a bunch of questions that folks should think about and know the answers to going into an auction, and kind of cover everything up until the auction itself. And I hope to cover that in part two. So the next part of the series hopefully will cover, you know, nominations, bidding strategies, recommendations in terms of how to manage your money, the dollar days, you know, how to handle the end of the auction, and then the reserve rounds. So that's the current plan, at least.
I can't wait till we get a chance to read part two. Part one is amazing. I think it's one of those articles that people are going to have to check back in on, right? You keep it bookmarked. You look again when you're starting to dive into your, whether it be Home League auction, the NFBC auction championship, the online championship. They'll have a bunch of those contests for $150 entry fee. And then, of course, as we get into the mid and high stakes season, so that'll be really interesting. One of the things that, you know, from my experiences with auctions live in NFBC the last couple of years, it's the organization and the focus and how important I think both elements and aspects of those are. I remember our very own Todd Whitestone here at FTN during the auction in Vegas. He came over, I started chatting with him for a little bit, and I just realized you just can't do that in an auction. You just got to kind of stay focused and understand, they know. He did joke later that he, you know, did that on purpose to distract me, but yeah, the focus. And then especially as you're moving into the reserve rounds, because after 23 rounds in NFBC, after the auction is completed, you've got the seven rounds that we're drafting snake, and to really be focused on kind of figuring out who will be there for you as this, you know, the snake starts kind of wrapping around, and what you need to prioritize for your team, and making sure, you know, the more organized you are, the better you can execute in those rounds. And they're just, it's so beautiful, the whole auction thing. It's just, there's so many elements to it. And yeah, it's phenomenal.
Oh yeah. No. And there's, I think they're more unpredictable than snake drafts. And obviously, you know, you can bid on and roster, you know, any player. So you're not constrained by your KDS slot. There's just so much, there's so much fun to do, but yeah, you definitely have to be prepared for all facets of the auction. And, mm-hmm. and I think some of the most challenging times during an auction is at the very end when everyone is down to a couple of dollars and has to fill out those last few roster spots. And, mm-hmm. you know, some of the guys rostered then are going to be cut in a week or two, and others are going to be fantastic performers, huge profits, and can really make a difference. So definitely have to be prepared for that.
All right, let's talk about some of the recent news signings that have occurred since the 18th, Wednesday the 18th. The most notable one, of course, is Christian Walker, not a Texas Ranger. That would have been too apropos. Instead, he joins the Houston Astros. He was linked to the Yankees. In fact, that's really where I thought he was going. A report came out on Thursday saying the Yankees weren't going to go big for a first baseman. So obviously there's some speculation there about guys like Josh Bell, maybe even Goldie Goldschmidt, and Carlos Santana. We'll see what ends up happening there. But nevertheless, on Friday morning, Christian Walker announced, a deal was announced, of course, by Jeff Passan, through Bob Nightingale, former guest of the pod, of course. 3 years, $60 million. Obviously a big addition. They've now have brand new corners. They've got Isaac Paredes and Christian Walker there. Bregman seems like he's gone. And obviously no Kyle Tucker. But what are your thoughts on Christian Walker, this deal, and how he will flow in this lineup, and also where you feel like he belongs now? Does there any movement with his ADP, where he's essentially been in this range around pick 100 with the past, you know, Josh Naylor's, Junior Caminero's of the world?
Yeah, I think it's a great signing for Houston. They certainly needed to do something. I mean, Paredes is pretty good, but they losing Bregman, and more importantly, losing Tucker, I think they really needed to boost the lineup, and they certainly needed a first baseman. I mean, they could have signed Bregman or a really good third baseman and moved Paredes to first, but they certainly needed a big corner infielder. I think Walker will do very well there. Favorable park in terms of left field for pulling balls. I mean, I think where he was in the Diamondbacks lineup was pretty favorable too, hitting behind Corbin Carroll and Ketel Marte. So I'm not sure this signing really moves the needle much in terms of where he'll go. Maybe slightly up, but I don't think so. What I think is going to be really interesting is what will the Astros do next? Because I think Walker helps fill a big hole at first base and in the middle of the lineup, but they are still looking like they're going to run out Chaz McCormick and Jake Myers, maybe Taylor Trammell and Mauricio Dubon in the outfield. They have a very good prospect, Melton.
Yes, Jacob Melton.
Who is not yet on their 40 man, I guess, but that, you know, that could be changed. I'm pretty confident is going to either break camp or make the team pretty early, but it still seems like this is not the outfield of a championship contending team. So it'll be interesting to see what the Astros, where they go from here.
Yes. There's no doubt that there will be moves made here. I think, you know, Jake Myers in center field, bottom of the order guy. I think that's pretty much there, locked in. Taylor Trammell and Chaz McCormick are just not going to be your corner guys. There'll be some moves to be made. I do think Chaz McCormick, he's, if I recall correctly, I'd have to look at his splits. Obviously had the big breakout 2023, struggled last season. And I think he's a little bit, he's been a better hitter against left-hander. So left-handed pitcher. So there definitely are a lot of outfielders out there. I do think they're going to add somebody. And you know, as it stands right now, they don't have a lot of lefty bats in their lineup.
Yeah, good point.
Outside of Yordan. So I'd want to look at, see who the lefty is. You know, Jock Peterson doesn't make sense on a team like this because they've got Yordan and they want him probably, you know, DH. So, and then as for Christian Walker himself, obviously the first thing that a lot of people think of, same thing when they thought of Paredes, are the Crawford boxes there. The left, you know, short left field, little box area. And interesting, so the way that our VDP projection, the model is set up here at FTN is, you know, I go in, we have our specific formula for park factors. So it's not just like taking specific something off whatever, you know, Fangraphs, Statcast, whoever has it, and just, you know, incorporating that. There's a little bit more to that sauce. And so when I change a player's team or I update them from free agent to there, I automatically look to see what numbers are changing, like whose averages are, the average going down, homers going up, or, you know, things like that, the rate stats changing based on our park factor settings. And what was interesting is instantly, as soon as I popped in Christian Walker, you would almost think counterintuitively, because we kind of think of Houston as not a great hitter's park, but yeah, Christian Walker's home runs bumped up by a few. Again, it's just a few. It's not going to be like, you know, 40% increase, but I like him a lot in this lineup. Yeah, I think that there's always an immediate effect in the market when a player signs. So I think if you're drafting in the next couple of days, the Christian Walker is going to be a little bit more expensive. And then within a couple of weeks, maybe it settles down.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, just the uncertainty of where he was going to wind up, because people knew he was not going back to Arizona, I think. So just the uncertainty, it could have been a lot worse in terms of landing spots, but I think this is a good one.
Yeah. What's interesting also is there are a few things about last year, even though he played less games, he spent a little time hurt. So he only played 130 games, only around 550 plate appearances. And so that's why he didn't have his typical 30 plus, you know, 100-ish RBI season like he had the previous 2 years. Last year it was still close, but if you look at his Statcast metrics, he actually had the highest average exit velocity he had had basically in his whole career. Since, you know, the closest to that was his breakout season in 2019, when he hit 29 homers. Other than that, you know, barrel rate was the highest it'd been since 2018, basically, which was a very small sample. Hard hit rate, same thing. So, I mean, it's a legit solid hitter, and I think it's just a matter of, it's roster construction really in that area, right? We talked about it on Wednesday with, you know, Mark Vientos, right? This is very similar here. You're getting a 250, 3,500 guy, and it's just, does he fit with your team makeup or not?
Exactly. And where he's going, he's part of that tier of like six or seven first basemen that if you miss them, there's quite a drop off. So this maybe moves him kind of, I think he's already kind of was towards the front of that tier, but I think he'll move him up even further.
We want to get to mostly pitching here, so we will just lightly touch on a couple of these things. I'll just throw the remaining signings here, and just let me know any thoughts that stand out. Veteran Gio Urshela signed a one-year contract with the A's, likely going to play some third base there, probably full-time, would make a lot of sense there. A couple of miscellaneous, just kind of random pitching signings. I don't know if you'd call a one-year, $9 million contract random, but Michael Soroka, is now part of the Nationals rotation. Griffin Canning, kind of an afterthought, probably a long reliever with the Mets. They got a lot of starters there. Patrick Sandoval in Boston sounds a bit dangerous. And then Max Kepler, German-born player, going to play for the Phillies. He signed a one-year, $10 million contract. So let's touch on a few of those guys.
Sure. I mean, Kepler's had a some injuries the last few years, but he was always a sneaky good player, you know, kind of a late round type outfielder. I think he can do very well in Philly. I mean, I do think he will probably be platooned, but you know, in terms of like a late fifth outfielder, it's a very good lineup. It's a good park. I could see if he's healthy, putting in a strong season and on the strong side of a platoon. Yeah, I mean, Urshela doesn't excite me really. Some of the pitching, I've been burned by Canning before. I'm just not seeing the development there. No real interest in Soroka. It doesn't really strike anyone out, and that's not a favorable park for him. Sandoval, I just wish I could turn back time and practice more pitching lefty. This guy is has not had a very successful couple of years, and he's coming off Tommy John surgery. He's probably not even back until the middle of the season, and he somehow got a two-year, $18+ million contract. So it's good to be a pitcher in this market.
It absolutely is. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I don't necessarily have the baseball playing genes in my family. Mine is more on the hockey side. On my wife's side is the tennis side. And especially considering I played baseball like Jim Abbott as a kid. And what I mean by that is I literally would catch the ball with my left hand and then take off my glove and then throw with the left. So as you can imagine, I never played organized baseball. It's just kind of how I felt comfortable, obviously very inefficient, very wrong. And maybe some people may not want to even listen to the pod after hearing that, but that is that. I now do catch with my right, by the way. So I have grown up.
It did not hurt your fantasy analysis.
No. on those pitchers, yeah, Patrick Sandoval signing with Boston. I think I still would not take him in a DC. Just one of those guys where, you know, you're going to want to like stream somebody like that. And listen, he can get you a win. He can have some big strikeouts. This is assuming he's in the rotation at all. But like, they're just a certain faction of players. Like, I guess it's like the Kyle Freeland, Ryan Feltner. There are a lot of examples of it where like, I think we just don't want to touch him in DCs.
No, I think they'd have to extend it to like 75 rounds before I'd be interested. I mean, a lefty like him gives up so much hard contact in Fenway Park. I just think it's a recipe for disaster. I think you raise a really good point, though, is that, you know, in DCs, at least my experience is that the starting pitchers you would want to use runs out before, you know, the kind of the effective middle relievers or closer specs. And so I think you really want to get your starting pitching. But at some point, what's left is really not going to be advantageous to roster. And at some point, you're better off with just getting, you know, a fairly high skilled middle reliever who can come in and, you know, give you four or five innings in a week and not blow up your ratios if you ever, you know, due to injuries, need to start that type of player. I think that's going to be a better strategy move than starting a pitcher like Patrick Sandoval most nights.
Indeed, yeah. On the Max Kepler front, You know, I was speaking to a friend who is a big Philly guy who really thinks that Phillies are going to be, you know, Rob Thompson's going to be a little more focused on platoons. And we saw a little bit of that last season with Bryson Stott and Edmundo Sosa. So we'll see with that lineup. The Phillies, you know, they have the strong side of the platoons are just so much stronger. And by that, I mean the lefties that are going to face mostly righties. So that would be like Max Kepler and Brandon Marsh, because the righties are weaker. You got Johan Rojas, who's solid defensively. He's speedy. And then Weston Wilson, who I guess had a little, had a few good games, especially if you played DFS. You remember that. But I do like Kepler in general. In our rankings, we had him about, 80 to 100 picks higher than his actual ADP. So I had been targeting him and drafting him. And really just comes down to health. I had been way off. I had a bias against Max Kepler and just did not like him for many years. And over the last couple of years, Kepler became a thing for me, and it did not work out last year because he was not healthy. It was a bust of a pick, but I do like him to bounce back. He is, he's getting older. He's going to turn 32 around the time of opening day. A couple other things here. One other thing I wanted to mention was we're tracking closers here, especially if we're drafting, and the Texas Rangers. So I did see somebody that, right after reliever setup man Jacob Webb was signed by the Rangers, I saw somebody take him pretty high in a DC. And maybe it's just like what if they don't sign Kirby Yates or whatever? Like, is that what they're going to settle on? It doesn't seem to me. The Rangers do not seem to me like an organization where they're going to have, Jacob Webb or Hobie Milner, the lefty who they just signed on Friday, be their guys. But they do seem like solid setup, man. Who are they going to end up signing here? Is it going to be Yates or someone else?
I'd like it to be Yates. I'm not just saying that because I just drafted him last night. No, this is a team, again, remember, this is a team who shelled out, literally hundreds of millions of dollars for Semien and Seager not too long ago. They just acquired Jake Berger. I think they committed to Nathan Eovaldi, if I remember right, like 3 years, $75 million. They're, picking up a chunk of Jacob deGrom's salary. I don't think the plan is to go into the season with Jacob Webb as your closer. Nothing against him. I think he's a fine reliever, but I think there's enough experienced closers who are available on the market, whether it's Yates or Tanner Scott or even Kyle Finnegan. But, I think there are enough closers that are available. Robert Suarez apparently is being made available by the Padres.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, I stumbled across it because I was about to draft him, and I just did a quick news search before doing so, and I saw that, and I decided to pass on him, and that's actually how I wound up with Yates three rounds later. But I don't know if they're actually going to move him or not, but supposedly they want to lower their salary a little bit and redeploy some money. So I don't know if he's going to be moved or not, but basically I think there's enough closers on the market that I'd be surprised if the Rangers stood pat and did not address the bullpen. I mean, they could always bring back David Robertson too, if they, if they want to go that way too.
My take on this is, because I've actually been, I've been working on this morning, our bullpen chart and bullpen, data. And the way I see it at this point, and just trying to, align the dots, and we obviously don't have insight of what's going to happen, and then things can pivot and change in these discussions. But the way that I see it is, I do know Kirby Yates is talking to the Cubs. So obviously that would stink for those with the Porter Hodge shares. Kirby Yates, I do feel like is going to sign to close somewhere. I could see, the way I see it, there are three big guys left who I think deserve to be closers. And the way I think that shakes up is Tanner Scott, Kirby Yates, and Carlos Estevez. I think Yates resigns with Texas. I think Tanner Scott lands on I think he could still land on the Phillies. This might be crazy. I know they just added Jordan Romano. I don't know you know, the level of comfort with his health. But most likely the Blue Jays. And then I see Estevez linked to the Nationals, who got rid of Finnegan. That's kind of how I see it. And that leaves guys like, you know, Kenley Jansen, Paul Sewald, David Robertson, and Finnegan, who I think would just probably be better as a setup man. I think he's about to burst anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. The skills are somewhat shaky, although he was fantastic for fantasy managers last year. And I had forgotten Kenley. I think he's only going to sign somewhere where he can close and continue to add on to his career saves total, but not sure where that's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I hadn't even thought about this until just looking at the bullpen chart, but like the Diamondbacks, like Justin Martinez and AJ Puck are like more your seventh, eighth, you know, extended guys. I think Martinez is a bit of a high of a walk rate. I don't know what to expect from this year. I just can't click that button there. And AJ Puck could do the job. Of course, he'd be great, but he's also not best utilized as just your, you know, 1.1 inning closer.
I agree. No, that would certainly lengthen their bullpen, and they did not seem to want to use Puck as a regular closer last year, notwithstanding how dominant he was late in the season. So I think they probably prefer him as the high leverage lefty.
Makes sense. All right, let's dive into the bread and butter here. FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, Vlad Sedler and Mike Mager. We're going to talk some early player pool thoughts, specifically on starting pitchers, the top 30 or so. Just as far as a little overcap of last season of how things shook out, of course, the massive Paul Skeen season, the guy who only basically had 133 innings and was basically the SP5 in fantasy last season. We're just looking at 15 teams, standard roto. Tarik Skubal was the top guy, depending what player rater you're looking at, you know, like upper 30s dollars in value. So it was Tarik Skubal. It was Zach Wheeler, number two, once again, returning to greatness. Just every year, every single season, just providing that fantasy value, staying healthy. And then him and Chris Sale, I guess, were the 2-3, depending on where you're looking. They're basically around the same. And Chris Sale, of course, was available in, you know, the 120 to 160 range this time last season, where people were very concerned up until even draft day, you know, opening day, about his health. Logan Gilbert was 4. And then after that, if we're just, you know, after Paul Skeens, just kind of looking at the top 10, it was Shota Imanaga, who obviously provided great profit. Seth Lugo, who really kind of fell out of nowhere. Bryce Miller, less strikeouts, but more, but incredible ratios. Those Seattle guys were amazing. And then it rounds out with guys like Dylan Cease, Framber Valdez, Jack Flaherty, who seems to be disrespected in drafts these days. And then the surprise, Ronel Blanco, Reagans, and some other guys. So that's the lay of the land from last season as far as fantasy value. And as you notice, a lot of those guys came from the later rounds. But I wanted to ask you, Mike, for those that do play in NFBC or just kind of getting into it, what is the deal specifically with NFBC and starting pitchers, why they're of so value, high importance, and why they're drafted higher in those formats?
I think it's probably a couple of things. Well, for one, just historically, NFBC kind of values pitchers seemingly more than a lot of other formats. Everything I hear is that pitchers come off the board much earlier in NFBC leagues and other leagues. Part of it, I think, is also that a lot of the NFBC's contests have an overall component. So instead of competing against 11 or 14 other managers, you might be competing against many hundreds or even thousands of other teams for that top overall prize. And it's really hard to get there unless you have really strong pitching, particularly you need strong ratios. Those are two of the scarcest categories in Roto, are ERA and WHIP, you know, that really make a difference. And so I think there's a tendency to draft pitching higher. And then, of course, everyone who has played NFBC over the years, particularly ones who do higher stake contests like the main event know that when you get into March, particularly late March, pitching just moves off the board, up the board. You hear all talk about, you know, the yellow brick road on the NFBC draft boards. Pitching is yellow, and you just see a massive yellow every year in the first 10 rounds or so. And part of that also is not just, you know, the higher stakes leagues where you see pitching valued even more, but when you get into March, you've probably already had a whole wave of pitcher injuries as pitchers ramp up in anticipation of spring training and get into spring training and start throwing. Then you start hearing about injuries and shoulder soreness, elbow soreness, and all of a sudden, you know, your top 20 might have, you know, five less pitchers who are healthy going into the season. So then everyone who's left standing moves up in value and tends to creep up the draft board.
Yeah, and a lot of NFBC managers wisely prioritize, and especially earlier in the drafts, because first of all, it helps kind of anchor your, I don't know if anchor is the right word, but like just it helps with the ERA and WHIP, which can really get out of hand in if you draft a team that just kind of has some questionable pitching towards the end of it, and you all of a sudden April, you have to start the process of dropping players. And in a 15 teamer, the options for pickup are usually a lot slimmer, and the probability of them doing damage to your ERA and WHIP are much higher. ERA and WHIP are, as we've heard many times and everywhere, it's just a scarcer, you know, they're scarcer. They're in less predictable in a lot of ways than like strikeouts, for example. You know, you kind of know who the guys are that are 30%+ strikeout rate guys, you know, the guys that are under 20%, and you know, kind of know how to balance that all.
I think part of it is just it's a reflection of where the NFBC market tends to be. I mean, if everyone else is going to be prioritizing getting early pitching, it really, you know, even if you would prefer not to, if you do not follow suit, you risk having a much weaker pitching staff. You know, if you're drafting first, second, or third, and you grab, you know, Witt, Ohtani, Judge, when the draft comes back to you on the 2-3 turn, you really have to think twice about not taking a pitcher, because by the time it gets back to you in the late fourth, early fifth, the pitching ranks will be somewhat decimated up top.
And maybe there's a pitching run at that point. And all of a sudden, if you're forcing yourself to grab a pitcher at the end of the fourth, early fifth, that's already, you know, one of the guys in the next tier. And another, I think an important point here is the extreme strategies rarely work. Like, you know, people trying the, let me do 10 hitters, then I'll go 10 pitchers, or vice versa. Listen, I've seen, you know, Yahoo's Dalton Del Don. He's a whiz, right? I've seen him pull it off in some 15 teamers a couple years ago with extreme strategies both ways. And especially a couple years ago with heavy pitching early on. But the thing about the pitching is you have to be perfect in the later rounds. You have to absolutely nail it. You think about the season that Phil had when he basically Phil had the greatest fantasy season of all time. It wasn't just him hitting on 24th round Robbie Ray and a couple of other those late round guys. He had some of those early anchors as well. I'm thinking back to Blake Snell in his Cy Young season in 2018. He was an 18th rounder that year, so he was tremendously profitable. But I remember looking back at those top teams in the overall, again, we're talking overall national competitions, the top teams had Blake Snell and one of the strong earlier pitchers, whoever it was in that time, Verlander or Scherzer or whatever. So you can't just rely on all of it. You have to have like a near perfect hit rate on all that, which is impossible even for, you know, a robot like Phil. And it was happening, by the way, with Ranger Suarez last year for a while. Then, you know, Ranger fell off. We're like, wow, he's pulling the magic again. But yeah, the ratios are everything. You do not want to get to the point of streaming in April and you're looking at like, oh man, I already am kind of hurting. Oh, Ryan Feltner, he's got two on the road. Maybe, you know, you don't want to go down that road.
No. I think a lot of people felt that with Detmers last year, late in the season. Coming off a great start against the Dodgers, probably was on everyone's bench for that. And then people streamed him the following week with two starts and paid dearly for it.
So looking at the player pool this year, just as a top line overview, you've got, you know, the two main guys are it's Paul Skeens and it's Tarik Skubal. Those are the very clear one and two. And in points leagues, the Yahoos, ESPN, CBS is the world, Fantrax, or different formats like that are not with the overall component. Maybe they're just like, you know, the standard leagues. Some of these drafts aren't even being drafted yet. We're doing this podcast in December, right? So this is a couple months out from that. By that point, you know, those are still like second, third round players. And that's where people start drafting pitching. And NFBC, with what we're drafting now, draft champions, the 50 round draft and holds, and the gladiators that have no bench, both Skubal and Skeens are first round picks for the most part. We remember Spencer Strider going as high as one last year. And obviously that did not work out because of health, but Skubal and Skeens, how do you decipher between the two? Say you're in a draft spot. Say you're just so lucky that you know, you're at the end of the first round and neither have been taken and you get to take one of them, or maybe you take both, but like, how are you deciding now on these two in December?
Boy, it's tough. I think they're very close. I don't think you're going to see either one of them at the end of the first round anymore. I already see them starting to creep up. In my current draft, I'm drafting from 10 right now, and both were gone in the first round before my pick. So I think they're already starting to move up. I could see both of them going, you know, in the 3-6 range come main event time. I guess I still kind of lean Skubal, and it's a slight lean, so I don't want to overstate the preference. And that's as of now. It could change come March. But, you know, he's done the big innings. I think that Detroit is going to be a better team this year. It wouldn't shock me if Detroit was one of the teams that added one of the closers we talked about. That would certainly be a strategic add for them. I don't have faith that the Pirates are going to be spending money or doing anything to really bolster their team. Both have favorable parks, which help. But I think the Tigers are an improving team. I like the way they looked and competed last year. I think their bullpen will be better. It wouldn't shock me if it's a lot better. So I guess I kind of lean Skubal, but boy, Skeens looks like the real thing. And he's a big guy. I think he can easily handle the velo. And Skeens would be my pick if prioritizing strikeouts more than anything.
Yeah, there's, you know, it comes down, you draft one of these two guys and you get 28 plus starts out of them, you know, maybe in just like one slight IL stint that isn't elbow or shoulder related, you're golden. You're really in a good spot. I mean, these are both guys that are, they're providing, you know, sort of golden era ratios. You're talking about, you know, WHIP can get to the, you know, like under 0.9 range and an ERA in the 2.5s. I mean, all of their, peripherals, sort of ratio indicators are in that range. So everything from XFIP, Sierra, FIP, XERA, they're all sort of aligned. They're in that 2.5 range. Strikeout rate, they're both 30, 33% guys. Even looking at, you know, we're going to talk a lot more about it, but like our pitch repertoire and arsenal metric that Frank Brink, our chief data officer, created is FILF. And there are some similarities with FILF and stuff. Stuff plus a little bit differently, different on the formulations, calculations, but you know, they're kind of all in the same ballpark, and both Skubal and Skeens were both elite. They were both in the 120, 125 range on their overall arsenal. You know, so strikeout rate, both about 30%. Skubal's walk rate last season, last 2 years, around 4.5%. It's not quite, you know, George Kirby range, but it is elite. And so when I first, you know, kind of the first round of projections, our FTN VDP projections, it's, there's a lot to it, but I guess you could say that the sort of base projections from Frank had them very close. And then when I sort of run my sort of layering, they're both still close. So you're giving up like a little bit on the strikeouts, maybe here or there. You're just, it's a plus minus, almost nothing. They're really close in value. What I think really it comes down to are wins, and wins are the least predictable category. Scooball obviously had a boatload of them last year. He had 18, he had an 18-4 record. And that can be really the big difference maker in there. Like you were talking about. So, but if, you know, you move the needle on, you know, projecting 13 wins to 15, that adds a few dollars of, you know, of roto value. So it's tough. I love them both, but I do think I have Scooball just slightly ahead.
Yeah, I think the only thing that's great analysis. I think the only thing I would add is if I feel the same way in March that I do now, it's the type of situation where if I wanted to start pitching in multiple leagues, I would go one of each and diversify rather than taking one of them multiple times, because I just don't – they're close enough that I would prefer to diversify.
With Scooball, by the way, it is – worth noting that he didn't see a massive increase. If y'all remember the, you know, Verducci effect and all that, but from 80 innings in 2023 to 192 last season. So that's just something to keep in mind on the health front. The guy's going in the second round right now. It's been Zach Wheeler for quite some time. He's been essentially the undisputed SP3 and Logan, and probably around like 18-20 overall. So that's sort of early second round. In NFBC drafts. And then Logan Gilbert usually goes before the end of the second round. And so he's just been phenomenal. He's kind of the new Wheeler in a lot of ways. And somebody that I had a bias on against, and obviously learned the hard way on that. So digging in on the weaknesses and digging in on the Gilbert train makes me love him very, very much now. But there's a new man that's joined the party. His name is Garrett Crochet. And he was the anyone over 100 innings pitched last season, there was no pitcher that had a higher strikeout rate than Garrett Crochet. His field score was filthy, same as Paul Skeens's, by the way, last year. So a lot to love there. Now with him joining the Red Sox, he's creeping up there. I've seen him go early second round, in fact. So how do you differentiate between those three, Zach Wheeler, Logan Gilbert, and Garrett Crochet?
Wow, it's tough. I would have Wheeler ahead right now. Again, very close. But in fact, I just took Wheeler in the current draft I'm doing in the second round. He's just been so steady for so many years. He's a workhorse. Very good ratios, very good strikeouts. It's a excellent team, although not the greatest defense at times, but I guess Garrett Crochet, I think, has upside that is higher than either Gilbert or Wheeler. And equal to or Skeens and Scooball as well. If you told me that all of them are going to pitch 180 innings, I might lean Crochet over all of them, but
yes.
With Crochet, the big thing is the health. He was fully healthy last year, even though they cut down his innings. He was available and healthy to make all his starts, which is really encouraging because the years prior he just couldn't stay on the field. So I think that's going to be kind of in the back of folks' minds, but I expect Crochet to move up and. It would not shock me at all if he was the third starting pitcher off the board come main event time. Going back to Logan Gilbert, I mean, here is a pitcher on the rise, and I think rightfully so. I mean, he's 27 now. He's getting better every year. The strikeouts are growing. I mean, not to the extent of Scooball or Skeens, but, you know, he's – his strikeout ratio was a couple years ago was under 23, then 24.5, now about 27 and a half. Fantastic control as well. Probably the biggest drawback from him is his team. I mean, he benefits from a great park, but last year, you know, 208 innings, fantastic ratios, you know, under a 0.9 whip, 220 strikeouts, and he still only had 9 wins. But, you know, you can look at it the other way too, that with some positive regression on wins, and you said it's the most variable of the pitching stats. If the Mariners could give him a little more run support or blow fewer games for him, he's right there, because, you know, you said he was fourth in the pitcher ranks last year. And that's with only 9 wins. Imagine if he had, you know, 13, 14, where he would have been. So also the thing I like about Gilbert a lot is, you know, the last 3 seasons, 32 games started, 32 games started, 33 games started. He feels like one of the safest options in a sea of risky ones. So I think for managers who would prefer to maybe give up the top upside in exchange for safety, he represents a very solid option.
Yes. Gilbert is incredible. I was just trying to pull up some unique data, but he, you know, for example, I was looking at his, like the whip last season was just off the chain. What was it like? Under
0.89.
I mean, that's like insane, you know, Verlander, Scherzer in their prime type stuff. Gilbert, I was trying to fight. I was trying to sort our filth score by individual pitch to see what Gilbert's, what was it? His slider was basically, so any pitch thrown more than 500 times, it was the second best pitch. So it was Chris Sale's slider had the highest ranking filth grade score of 166. Gilbert's was 159. And then Yates's fastball, by the way, was right in the middle there, 163. And then right behind there, Tarik Skubal's changeup. But he's incredible. And I have him very close with Wheeler, to be honest. I think there could even be a little uptick in the strikeouts. Crochet's the guy that maybe it's in my head where, because he was, I guess, one of my biggest, you could say biggest profitable, you know, pickups or like moves last season, that I'm almost like waiting for the other shoe to drop, where I'm afraid to. I think it's like a sort of like a psychological bias where I'm like afraid to pay the high price on him. But also, you know, we see these things happening. Like, he's kind of is like baby Sale. He's like the new, you know, lefty in Boston. He's incredible. So, man, I just hope he stays healthy. But out of these three, he is, you know, we can't predict the future. We're not doctors, or definitely not roto doctors. But that's the guy I have the least amount on. But it almost isn't going to matter, because if I don't want to pay like a 17th overall pick on him, then I'm not going to probably be able to get him at that point.
Yeah, makes sense. I was just checking. One of the things I saw with Gilbert is he is the in the 100th percentile in like extension. And that really helps his arsenal a lot.
Yep. Yeah, pitcher list, Nick Pollock, really, really big on extension, all that stuff. And you know, the other guys that are going, like the next, that's kind of your top five. And then you have, this is the most interesting group, to be honest. This is, you know, Blake Snell, Jacob DeGrom, George Kirby, Dylan Cease, Cole Reagans. And am I missing anyone, or is that it? That kind of the last seven to
yeah, I think so.
The top 12. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's tough. Did you say DeGrom?
I did. Yeah. He's the most polarizing guy of all time. Like, I post a draft board where I have him in the third. They're like, oh, that's crazy, that's risky. But we've been talking about it for months now. Like, I don't know, man. There's something about, listen, there are facts. And yes, the fact is he has not pitched meaningful innings in 5 years. But we got a taste of, you know, regular old DeGrom when he didn't come back at the end of last year, and he is recovered and he is healthy and he should have a regular spring training. And granted, come March, we could all be, you know, be disappointed again. I'll never forget the look on, you know, Mike Masato's face when we were in Vegas and he drafted him first overall. And then an hour later, we found out he was injured. Like, that's brutal. I hate that. That's a, you know, such a horrible feeling. So we've been through it before. We're kind of conditioned for it. And because of that, most people in the masses are like, oh, I'm not even touching it. I'm not even messing with it. But you're passing up, yes, a lot of risk, but you're passing up a massive buying opportunity, a guy who could basically be your SP1 with ease.
Yeah, he can either be fantastic or come close to sinking a team, depending on your price point for him. But I think, I don't know, my expectation is that if he's looking fantastic come spring training and he's healthy, he could be easily come all the way up along with Crochet and be kind of a first round pick, end of the first round. And he has SP1 upside. You know, it part of it is too, I put a little more faith in the pitchers who are coming back from surgery than the ones who constantly have arm problems and rely on rest. You know, so I was off the ground for several years, but now that he's, you know, he had the surgery and he's fully rested, you know, it might be the time to jump back in. But of course, he's going to be close to 37 by the time the season starts. So it wouldn't be shocking if, you know, he does run into some issues. But
I mean, we almost, one other thing on that, I mean, you almost expect issues, right? Like nobody, I don't think anyone's going into it like fully confident. And also like the DeGrom love that I'm showing here. And yeah, maybe it's also based in this time of the year where it's kind of a different level of what we're entering. It's, you know, it's $50 gladiators. Not to say 50 bucks is, you know, it's some people, for some folks, it's their home league and whatnot, and they're not drafting for another 3 months. And then, but a lot of us are entering a lot of these $50 gladiators, the $150 DCs. And of course we don't want to burn money, but, you know, there is a lot of upside with DeGrom. I will say you don't need him to win. You almost need like the kind of, you know, 140 plus innings, perfect situation. Hey, it's great. But I understand the case for like, don't draft, you know, for not drafting him. There are many ways to win. You don't need him to win the league. It's kind of more like a vanity thing. But I don't know. That's just what I'm doing now. I don't know where I'll be with it in March.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm the same way. I'm still preparing for the March drafts and researching pitchers. What I'm curious about, I want to get your take on, is a guy I always struggle with, and that's Blake Snell. I haven't been a Snell guy. And so of course I've missed his two fantastic seasons, and kind of curious what your thought is. When he's on, he looks absolutely unhittable. But I've had trouble pulling the trigger on him. So just kind of curious where you are on him, if I could ask.
I've been in some drafts, and since I've done a lot of the gladiators, I've been mixing it up. I've had a lot of picks where I have, I have like the fourth or fifth pick overall. So then I'm looking at like pick 34, 35, with my third round pick. And if I've gone two hitters, I have mixed things up. I've taken a Sale there. I've taken a DeGrom there. And then since he's come to the Dodgers, I've taken a Snell there because I do think that's where his value is. We know exactly his profile, right? He's one of, you know, 99.5 percentile in strikeouts and in his stuff. It's incredible. Almost 35% strikeout rate last season. And this is of course in 20 starts, 10 of which were quality starts, only pitched 104 innings. And, still, even though it wasn't like the best year, it was still like a 3.12 ERA with a 2.5 xERA, a 3 FIP or xFIP, and like a Sierra right around. So that makes sense. And that was, you know, obviously in a great park last season in San Francisco. And then the walks, that's exactly who he is. You know, you're running projections, you're going to put him in there between 10 and 11, 12%. Like that's just what it is. And it does in fact impact the bottom line. And in this case, like the whip. It is interesting, though, he did reduce his walk rate last season with the Giants. Instead of 13.5% in 2023, it was 10.5% last year. So that's something. That's improvement. It also led to his best whip season since his breakout Cy Young year. So he had a 105 whip in 2024 and a 0.97 way back in 2018. Outside of that, he's always around 120, 125. So for me, I think there's a little bit of a boost with being a Dodger now. I think there's some obviously acclimation to a new team, but in an environment like this, you're in the rotation where, it's Yamamoto, it's Glasnow, these guys, Ohtani, that are going to be in the rotation. You're going to want to shine, right? You don't want to, it's like almost an internal competition there as well. The concern is obviously there are always some health concerns with Snell, and then innings. I think the six man thing is a little overblown, to be honest, because I do not think Ohtani's going to be ready. I don't think they're going to be in, six man mode off the bat. They could be, but, either way.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because I think that's one of the things that I've been struggling with too, is, to what do you weigh it at all? I mean, a pitcher goes this could go for any of the Dodger starters. If they go six man and they seem intent on doing it, and even if Ohtani is not available right away, they might have other guys, Gonsolin, and maybe May is healthy, or they do have other guys they could plug in, so they could do a six man. They seem to want to do a six man. Whether they're actually going to do one remains to be seen. So, but if they do a six man, you're looking at maybe maxing out at 28, 29 starts instead of 32, 33. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers are known for having a well-timed IL stints. Let's put
the
it
Phantom.
Down. Yes. So, but on the other hand, on the positive side, you have probably pitching for the best team in baseball, World Series champs, obviously, going to have more run support than, any other pitcher, and probably a fantastic bullpen. I don't know that, we know today who's going to be the closer, but they got some really strong arms in that bullpen. Are you neutral for pitchers on the Dodgers? Do you ding them for maybe a six man, or is just the benefit of pitching for the, one of the best teams in baseball kind of trump the innings risk?
The projections, the VDP projections, that'll be out hopefully at the end of the month. They're taking some time. They're going to be reflected on this in the right way. And that's obviously, we're not going to have Glasnow for, 27 plus starts. It's just not, if it happens as an outlier, enjoy, the price. You got him at like pick 95. That's great. If he gets you 30 starts, but that's just not where they're going to be. But the rest of the guys, no one is going to be projected in the innings pitched in the Logan Gilbert, Zach Wheeler range. And it's also not just a straight, there's some science and there's some, feel to it as well. So it's not just going to be a formulaic, 140 to 160, that's kind of the ballpark in them. I have this feeling. I think the Dodgers are going to sign one more starter, because every year it's the same thing. And I've seen funny tweets about it. It's like they have the most loaded rotation you've ever seen ever. And then by August, they have nobody.
Where are they?
Yeah. Like Dustin May is probably better used as a, long reliever. He could be the closer, but they have like three closers. Gonsolin coming back from Tommy John. Ohtani's not ready. And then it's Snell, Yamamoto, and Glasnow. And then like Bobby Miller, like maybe if he comes back and becomes something, he's another guy who could be like maybe a better closer, but they have like four now. So they're going to get someone else. It's going to be like shocking, and everyone's going to hate the Dodgers even more, but it'll be like a Flaherty, Burns. I don't really know all the dollars. They're missing one more guy, I feel like, for the Dodgers,
Interesting. Yeah. No, looking forward to diving in on them. They certainly have a lot of attractive pitchers, but where exactly you slot them, it's just a lot of things to consider.
I think for like managed leagues, they're fantastic. You just always target Dodgers pitchers if you can get a good deal on them. Like, why is Yamamoto going, you know, why is he the, you know, 12th or 13th pitcher off the board as opposed to like the sixth or seventh, really? I mean, is it because he's going to make, you know, possibly five less, you know, few less starts or something like that? Because, you know, his per start stuff is going to be really, really good. And in a managed league, you can work around it if you know he might be skipped or it's a six man or whatever. So I think they're all fantastic. I do think Glasnow is a little scarier. Corbin Burnes, I did just want to mention he's not signed. I wanted to throw a shout out to the great Ron Chandler and the forecaster. He has his annual, it's probably the best thing you could read. You know, his sort of early, his intro article in the forecaster every year. And one thing I like to look at is, you know, pitchers or hitters who have earned, you know, value or a certain amount of value for so many consecutive years or whatever. So pitchers who have earned $20 or more, you know, per HQ, you know, last year, or guys that have done it for the last 2 years, it's Wheeler, Gilbert, Framber Valdez, Kirby, and Corbin Burnes. If you're looking at pitchers that have earned 20 or more fantasy dollars in three straight seasons, it's Corbin Burnes and Valdez. And after that, there's only one guy who's done it 4 years in a row, and that's Corbin Burnes. But wait, there's more. There's a guy that's done it 5 years in a row, and obviously it's Corbin Burnes. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, no, something to be said for consistency. You know, he's kind of like the J-Ram of pitching.
That's great.
He may not be like the number one guy or even the number two guy, but he's always going to kind of be up near the top. Yeah, no, it's something for everyone, you know, for someone who, you know, wants to have a riskier pitcher, if you can come back and get Burnes or start with Burnes, you know, you should get a bunch of good innings out of him. I think people are concerned, and probably rightfully so, that is kind of his dominating stuff has seemed to have diminishing somewhat. The strikeout rate is going down and down over time. So as he gets older and you see things like that, I think there's some legitimate reason for concern. But then again, you look at the year-end stats and, you know, for a late third-round pick these days, you'll probably take it.
Where do you think he lands, by the way? That's really the tough question here.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like the Giants want to compete based on, you know, what they gave Willy Adames. They could certainly use another pitcher to team up with Webb. I haven't heard much about the Orioles trying to retain him. They have not really spent much money at all. And they benefited from having just the most awesome farm system. But now these guys, I think they're ready to win. You know, they right now it looks like they're going to lose Santander and they're replacing him with Tyler O'Neill. But they haven't done all that much. They got Sugano, which is, I think, a good signing. But, you know, at least as of now, you know, according to Roster Resource, their starting five is Zach Eflin, Grayson Rodriguez, Dean Kramer, Sugano, and of course Trevor Rogers, who
he went to Driveline.
Yeah, yes, he went to Driveline straight from AAA after his demotion. So, you know, I mean, for a team with championship aspirations, I'm not seeing that. I think they need an SP1. I don't think that's Zach Eflin. I'm not sure it's Grayson Rodriguez, who's, you know, has had a couple of seasons marred by lat injuries in the minors and last year in the majors. So I'm not sure if and when Baltimore is going to spend, but there's not many kind of ace starting pitchers left available to them. And of course, you know, the Red Sox are still looking for another pitcher to go with Crochet. Mm-hmm. And they have the financial wherewithal to do it.
Well, they've been looking at, I mean, Boston, the Red Sox have been in talks with the Mariners trying to get Luis Castillo. I think they made some like ridiculous, almost insulting offer to try to get Logan Gilbert. They weren't having it. So, but yeah, they're, you said it exactly. Like, we've been doing this long enough, right? That you just look at that, you open roster resource, you see the Orioles rotation, you go, oh, there's no way they're going to battle with that. There's just no way. Dean Kramer and Trevor Rogers are, you know, who you're relying on. You need more depth than that. Somebody's coming over. It's a Pivetta, Manea, and that's if a Flaherty or a Burns don't return.
Right. The one difference I think the Orioles probably have than other teams is that if they're really refusing to spend big in a very hot starting pitching market, they have the player capital to make a trade.
Yeah.
So they have the talent to get a pitcher if they need it, if they decide to go that route instead of spending money. But I can't imagine them not doing anything. They have such a talented roster, so many, you know, great young players that it would seem almost a waste to go into the season with that staff. And you mentioned Seattle. I mean, Boston was trying to trade with Seattle. Baltimore could too, and maybe Baltimore could put together a package that Seattle likes, because, you know, they're kind of the opposite. I mean, they have such a great pitching staff, but it would almost be criminal to waste it another season without adding anything to that lineup.
By the way, why are the – what is it? Am I missing here? Are the Padres trying to trade Cease, Dylan Cease? Because he could go to the Orioles too. That would make sense.
Yeah, that could happen. I came across that that Suarez is on the blocks too. I guess that what I read is I think they're not thrilled with the TV situation, the revenue situation, and they're trying to get the salary down to, I think it said like $240 million in the article that I read. And at least with Suarez, they thought that if they could unload his salary and trade him, they could redeploy the money elsewhere. I'm guessing the same thing with Cease. And I think both of them are free agents after this season, if I'm recalling correctly. So it might be, you know, a situation where they want to get what they can for them. Yeah, they have some very big contracts with Tatis and Machado and Bogarts. So I'm not sure that they're going to be in a position to, you know, re-sign a guy like Cease. So that might be why.
Yeah, and I know that I have a little bit of a bias against Dylan Cease. And obviously, really, what is it? It's just the fact of the control. And unless he makes, you know, markedly improves there and is, you know, not a 9-10% guy that we're used to seeing, then sure, he has some value. But I think he's a little bit of a guy that I think is slightly overpriced. But at the same time, I don't know why I'm not feeling the same way about Cole Reagans, who obviously is someone else who's got minor control issues for somebody who has an elite arsenal. But I think the ballpark and, you know, the defense and a lot of good things, I think, going for Cole Reagans. And I think that he's another guy that I think could easily be a top five pitcher if everything goes right, or gets lucky and has like an 18-win season with 250 strikeouts. It's all possible.
He has that upside for sure. And Cease did improve his walk rate a little bit last year. So maybe there's hope there too.
Looking at the guys, these are the, you know, after the top 12. So you've got the players we named are take you through the first 12 starting pitchers. The next group is roughly going in the 55 to 70 overall range. And we already talked about Yamamoto of the Dodgers. So we can kind of, you know, put him part of that bucket of 13, the first 13 guys. The remaining guys, they're going in the fourth, fifth round of 15 teamers, you know, sixth, seventh, and 12ers when we get to that season. And you've got Michael King. You've got Garrett Cole, the legend. Pablo Lopez, who had a little bit of a down year after being essentially a third rounder last season. Framber Valdez, who apparently is not getting dealt now. The wild card, I don't know if it's much of a wild card, Roky Sasaki. I think we kind of know exactly how good he should be. Shota Imanaga, top 10 starting pitcher last season. Great success in Wrigley and on the road. And then Bryce Miller. So that's the next group. And I guess we'll lightly touch on any one that stands out as far as who you think is overvalued or undervalued.
Okay. So I think I want to look a little more into Sasaki. I trust everything I'm reading with this stuff, but he had arm injuries last year and didn't pitch a whole season. So I need to dig into him a little more in terms of whether I feel comfortable paying what will probably be a pretty high price for him. I want to also see how Yamamoto looks in the spring because he had some arm injuries last year, but I know the stuff is filthy and he's on a great team. Michael King had a great season. Framber Valdez kind of feels like one of the safer options there, although with his ground ball tendencies, he tends to he can have some games where he's BABIP to death and will probably run a higher whip than most of the other guys here. Bryce Miller looks and Shota Imanaga both really surprised on the upside last year and I think are fairly priced this year. Not sure I have a clear favorite from them. I've been trying to get in the earlier tier and I haven't been drafting from this tier all that much. I have some Framber so far. And I drafted Shota in my current draft. I don't know. Do any stand out for you as kind of head and shoulders above? I feel like most of them are belong in a tier behind the ones that we previously were discussing, but they all feel like they belong in that kind of fourth, fifth round tier.
When we have it listed the way that we do on the stat line, and I can, you know, can kind of clearly see it, especially we're not at a point where we're kind of breaking guys up in tiers. We're just, or positions in tiers. We're just sort of, we've been drafting projections, doing all of our thing. What stands out clearly to me is that no one really stands. This is a group that to me feels you can extend with the next group that we're going to talk about, the round six guys. There's really isn't a lot of, I think it's one bigger bucket with these fourth, fifth round guys and then the guys that are going in the sixth round. And sure, there's some preferences and some guys we don't like as much, but I think they're all kind of one big group. And those guys would be two more of the Minnesota Twins pitchers, Bailey Ober and Joe Ryan. I don't see any reason why either of them wouldn't have a better year than Pablo Lopez if they all made 30 starts. You've got, you know, Luis Castillo's in the group, but I feel like, I don't know, just... not loving it, especially if he goes to Boston. I'm going to love it even less. So I just have not been clicking on him. Aaron Nola, my annual fade, no matter what, which probably people think I'm crazy, but just, I don't know. It's the volatility of the ERA and whip. I just can't handle it, no matter the strikeouts. Tanner Bibee, phenomenal, great ballpark. Spencer Schwellenbach, amazing rookie, was up there, top six overall filth metric leaders. And Hunter Green, a healthy season from Green, was great, actually, a great American last year. You got Hunter Brown outside of that big, harsh start where he served up 11 runs. Like to forget that day. You got him, Logan Webb, Freddy Peralta. So I do see how somebody would have Michael King or Valdez kind of over those next guys, but I feel like it's slight. And that's also what I'm starting to see in the projections. They're all in this sort of big batch of like a $3 to $4. You know, plus or minus. And if I'm moving around certain things, that's kind of, I don't know. They're just one big batch.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the one guy that I particularly like in that tier is if Joe Ryan is fully healthy going in to the season, I could see liking him more than a lot of the guys in the prior tier.
This was who? Sorry.
Joe Ryan.
Yes. What is with the the only thing that causes me hesitation, I feel like he can be one of those elite pitchers, but he always has some sort of shoulder or something always going on with him. So I'm always like really concerned of Joe Ryan. I think he may be not an ideal gladiator pick, but I think in, you know, as we start to get into like managed league season, as long as the price doesn't skyrocket too much, and I wouldn't anticipate it to, I think he could be a phenomenal value, like one of those high, you know, big difference with the K and walk rate, things like that. Great control, great stuff, great everything, but just a little bit of health issues.
Yeah, no, I think so. He's certainly has the upside.
And then Michael King, I think, man, he was great for us towards this down the end of the stretch when they converted him, the Yankees, into a starting pitcher. And those who had him on their fantasy roster, obviously paid dividends there at the end of 2023. And then last year, remember the joke in the first half of the season where like you couldn't time Michael King, like whenever you started him, you'd kind of get blown up a little bit. And then when, you know, then you'd sit him, and then of course he would be the gem. And then he just, everything kind of evened out and he was great. But maybe there's another, another step that's possible with somebody like him.
Yeah, no, I thought he was fantastic last year. And he showed that he could handle the starter workload. So I think he belongs in that tier, and he could be one of the strikeout leaders this year.
Any final thoughts on any of these guys? We're going to get into a little bit more of this as we go position by position as we get into the podcast in January and February, March, getting you ready for all your big drafts. Here we're just kind of doing an overview, looking at the top 30 pitchers, getting a little feel for it. Any overall thoughts, or is there any other pitcher that we didn't discuss that you wanted to touch on?
No, I think those are really interesting. One of the guys I particularly need to dive into a little more is Schwalenbach. He looked so good at times last season, but he's really moving up the draft boards, and have to see if he belongs there.
Yeah, he's absolutely somebody I'm going to be needing to dig in a little bit more. Just know, a guy from Nebraska, really good reputation. All of his, peripherals, and by that I mean all the indicating ratios pointed to, he wasn't lucky at all. This is like kind of who he was. And even in the minors, and again, he skipped double A, from double A straight to the majors, never even pitched in triple A, but he'd always been a pretty good, guy with control, high strikeout rates, low walk rate. And I mean, to come in as a rookie and have a, what comes out to a 1.67 walks per nine, which is, 4.6% walk rate in 21 starts in the big leagues. And granted, you're pitching for the Braves, which is great. I mean, it's something worth noting. So I feel like I kind of have a bias against Schwalenbach a little bit, but I think that's going to change now as I start to dig into him a little bit more.
Yeah, no, the stuff looks good, and he's going to be on a great team. So definitely appealing. I have one share so far. But he's one of the guys who, he record is of the others. So it's kind of a standout for me as someone who I really have to dive back into some more.
All right. We, Mike, obviously this is not, this might be last time we chat in December or in the year 2024, because, hey, listen, the year is almost over. But we will be back with all kinds of good stuff in the coming season. We'll let you guys know if we're going to run another podcast here before the new year. But Mike, anything you want to say to all the listeners here as we head out into the holiday season?
No, just happy holidays to everyone. And when you're done with your eggnog and celebrations and family time, it's time to start ramping up. It's draft season is upon us. I think after last season, where the players who signed really late all had rough seasons, I think things are going to move more quickly, and folks are all going to be signed hopefully before spring training, and it's going to be an exciting time, and can't wait to see everyone in at the live drafts hopefully in March.
Echo what Mike said. Happy holidays, everybody. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy New Year. For Mike Mager and Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next time.